The Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder, during these days of self-isolation and quarantine, when you've had more time at home with your family and more time at home with your pets, for that matter, and you're reminded how much you love your pets, how much they are a part of the family, you wonder, do animals have souls? Will we see our deceased pets when we get to heaven? You've heard many Christian pastors saying that animals do not have souls, and therefore they will not be resurrected, and this concerns you. Well, my friend, those who teach such things have no verse in the Bible to support the idea. The truth is, the Bible is silent on the issue. Now, the Bible is very clear about the afterlife as far as people are concerned. It says nothing about animals, at least not directly. For what it's worth, I can offer an opinion, but that's all it is, an opinion. And I do think it's an opinion that makes sense. It is easy for God to resurrect an animal, just as easy as it is for him to resurrect a human being. Now, that doesn't mean all animals would necessarily resurrect, but you are important to God. Your pets are important to you. So I have no trouble whatsoever believing God can resurrect your dog or cat. We do witness interesting character traits and personalities. I'm seeing some humorous observations online. Dogs these days are bewildered but delighted that their masters are now home all day. Cats these days are bewildered and annoyed that their servants are now home all day. Of course, dogs and cats are not the only animals hanging around our homes. There are others less welcome, such as gophers. My wife, our house gardener, I have no green thumb at all. My wife, Dana, is our house gardener. She's frustrated that no matter what she tries, gophers still keep getting into her garden. Well, at Dixieline last week, listening to her ask questions about what product will work best and what she's already tried in the past, including two exterminator companies, it finally came to me. And it's so simple. All we need to do is read out loud to the little critters Gavin Newsom's executive order to stay in their own home on lockdown. Speaking of staying home, speaking of lockdowns, I wish people would listen to what the president actually says instead of allowing the mainstream media to explain to us what he said. Latest example, all this hysteria, which claims, supposedly, that President Trump plans to lift all guidelines about quarantine come Easter, completely ignoring the advice of the medical community, completely ignoring the situation in New York, such is the claim, such is the concern. It's all a pack of nonsense. The truth. President Trump never said he was going to ignore the doctors. His team of doctors are with him at practically every single news conference, and he's doing them every day. President Trump never said he would lift restrictions come Easter. He said he would like to. He is considering it. He was careful to add that we would evaluate the situation as we got closer. And as a matter of fact, now that we are closer, breaking news, it happened just a couple of hours ago, they are now extending it to the end of April. So this Easter thing isn't even going to happen anyway. But when he talked about it, he was offering hope. That's part of what we expect from a leader. The president also claimed that turning the economy back on could be done in different stages. from various parts of the country not as affected as New York. It was not his intention to suggest that the economy is more important than human lives, rather to remind us that the economy also affects human lives. My friends, it is time to take a sobering view of the situation and realize that professionals in different fields tend to see things through their own lens and their own tunnel vision, which is appropriate and understandable to some degree. Doctors naturally are going to be as cautious and careful as they can. They want lots of time, lots of testing, and they are not in the habit of making guesses about when things might lighten up. They will always err on the side of caution. Most of them find doom and gloom predictions of the economy irrelevant when they are trying to save lives. That's what makes them good doctors. But these doctors will not be blamed if the economy tailspin sends us into the next depression. President Trump will. Meanwhile, economists and businessmen see things much differently. They come from a background where they had to take risks. They gathered the best information available, but it was not based on facts as certain or concrete as what might be provided in a test tube. They realized that if the economy is shut down much longer, it will be years before we recover. But these economists will not be blamed if the economy is jump-started at the expense of more people dying from coronavirus. President Trump will. Both visions have their merit, and both should be cut some slack. As is often the case in life, when we have two extreme positions, the truth is found somewhere in between. My friends, this is not an either-or situation. Believe it or not, one can be concerned about human lives and concerned about the economy at the same time. It is a balancing act, one that cannot avoid give and take. Restarting the economy will risk human lives. The risk can be minimized, but the risk will remain. On the other hand, delaying the economy jumpstart might bring us to a point of no return, or at least a very slow return, hurling us into another depression. It looks like a lose-lose choice either way, and therein lies the problem. The assumption that this needs to be a choice between money and human lives rather than the incorporation of both visions. The truth is, human lives are lost and affected by the state of the economy, too. We've seen what happens in countries where economies have crashed. Putting aside the obvious, such as higher poverty, rise of crime, vandalism, shortage of police protection, there's also the stress factor of people suddenly out of work, wondering how they will feed their own families. This observation is not an antithesis to medical concern. The medical community has been telling us for years how often stress contributes to serious illness. And another obvious observation, the economy of the medical community itself is affected every bit as much when the surrounding economy crashes. The medical community does not exist in isolation. When the medical business is at risk, everyone's health is at risk. Bottom line, we must do everything possible through medicine, quarantine, and social distancing. We must be as careful as possible, short of destroying the country we live in. It is not health or the economy. It is health and health. Our president is trying to keep us safe from COVID-19. He's consulting doctors and other professionals. He is cutting through red tape, getting new drugs and vaccines tested more quickly, offering federal aid to places like New York and California and Louisiana, the hardest hit places. He's also trying to save our economy. But the man does not own a crystal ball. He is quite aware that if restrictions are lifted, things might get worse. It's a risk, as is much of life. He can only listen to advice from doctors and economists alike and finally go with his best guess. Dwight Eisenhower did the same thing before D-Day, the Atlantic crossing of the American and British military from England to occupied Normandy, France. There were all kinds of matters out of their control, such as the readiness of Germany and the weather itself, which was atrocious back in those days. He listened to many opinions from many military advisors. He listened to meteorologists. He made the best decision, finally, the best decision possible with the best information possible. In the end, it was still a big gamble. Had that landing not been successful, history would have painted Eisenhower quite differently. The scenario is much different today, but the gravity of the situation is almost the same, if not exactly the same. Which of us would want to be in President Trump's shoes right now, having to make these kinds of decisions? Let us extend less criticism and more grace. And now let me introduce a man who always extends grace. In fact, grace is his middle name, but his first and last names are Mike Friedenberg. Mike, welcome back to our program.
Well, Bob, thanks for having me back. We do live in, I guess there's an old Chinese proverb / curse, may you live in interesting times. And we are living in interesting times right now. This is unprecedented, perhaps the Spanish flu, but I wasn't around then, so I can't really relate to that. But I want to start off just acknowledging that it is a frightening time, and there are people out there who perhaps are listening to the show that either have the coronavirus or they know people that have the coronavirus. And this is a serious illness, and there's plenty of reason to be concerned. And so when we're talking here about it, I don't want to all be minimizing it, but I also want to have some perspective and put the right balance on it, because I do think that the media has really, really distorted things and pushed things too far in one way. And so when I talk, maybe I seem like I'm coming from the other side, but I'm just trying to balance it out.
As I am, we take it seriously, but we want to bring about some perspective.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the things I do want to just briefly, won't spend as much time as that I did last week, but I do want to talk about the whole role of China here, because
China had a role in this, Mike?
Yes.
No.
I mean, last week we went through it and there was a timeline here, but let's just quickly summarize. They knew about the virus in November, mid-November. They knew that it was highly contagious by mid-December. They have one of the most sophisticated viral research labs right there. In fact, a few hundred yards from the market where theoretically where it came from, where the China's been saying came from, is where this massive level 4 facility thing is. So the idea they didn't know it was contagious is absolutely ludicrous. They hid it. As I said, Southampton study showed that if we had jumped on the virus at that time, we could have reduced the number of infections by 95%. That means maybe tens of millions and tens of millions of people not infected, many, many thousands of lives saved. So China is culpable in this. And one of the other things is a paper, an academic paper actually written by a couple of Chinese academics, which was pulled down by the Chinese government, hypothesized and made a very strong case that it was an escaped virus from that research facility. Now, we don't know, but they also made a very strong case that didn't come from the marketplace, that it came somewhere else into the marketplace, not from the marketplace. So we don't know. We're going to have to find this out at some time in the future, but it is not a ludicrous idea to think that the one level 4 research facility that was actually researching the virus known to be the closest one to what we have right now, the COVID-19 virus, was in that facility being researched. So it's not crazy. Nobody has come out with any kind of scientific reason why it's not the case. What you have heard is, well, that's silly. That's biased. That's bigoted. That will, prejudice people. That's not the way to approach this. We have to look at this, when all is said and done. Now, for right now, because China does control a lot of supplies, people are probably, keeping it a little bit under control there.
Okay. But we'll be right back with National Review contributor Mike Friedenberg. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
As if you haven't figured it out by now, Bob is
mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life. But Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170. 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development, that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at wisdomworkschristianpreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. wisdomworkschristianpreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
I'm your host, Bob Siegel, joined with Mike Friedenberg.
Okay, so just as we were talking, we heard the ridiculous statements coming out of China, you know, a couple weeks back that they had no new reported cases. And as we see now, Spain now has surpassed China. That is just completely and utterly unbelievable. And there's been some stuff coming out of China now. Dribs and drabs that suggest that it's that, you know, that they are not only they're lying, but they're lying just, you know, really the big lie, huge lie. I believe that they have made a decision that they are going to try to get the economy back on track, regardless of the death toll of their people. And they're presenting this face to the world. This is a propaganda effort on their part, talking about helping the rest of the world with supplies and things like that. Meanwhile, they have a raging pandemic happening inside their country. And there's bits and pieces of evidence that this is the case.
So you believe that what Trump keeps getting accused by the media of doing, China's government really is doing?
Oh, yes, I do. And they have a long history. They don't have the same, their philosophy. Their government does not have the same respect for human life that in general American governments have. They just don't. So and back in February, you know, when things were just getting rolling on this, exiled Chinese billionaire came up with some numbers there that were very interesting. And it was having to do with crematoriums. And he had contacts in China, and he talked about crematoriums running at 4 to 5 times the rate, 24 hours a day, while China was talking about death rates that were, you know, 3,000 people. So that was a piece of data there that you can look at and say, you know, well, okay, that's one piece of data. Now what we have here is Bloomberg did a report and talked to people. They're shipping huge amounts of urns, burial urns, into Wuhan for the crematoriums to put people's ashes into. So, you know, 5,000 urns coming to one crematorium. So I just do not believe what the Chinese government is saying. So anytime that we talk about comparison, the negative is that it'd be nice to think that by their swift action, they were able to radically reduce and, you know, reduce the infections to zero practically. But that's just not realistic. But with that said, I really do believe that the social distancing we're doing right now is having a big impact in reducing the infections in this country. It has to. It by logic, it is substantially reducing the spread, and it is saving lives.
It may not be keeping it from inevitably spreading, but it is at least maintaining it so that the hospital can stay on top of it and treat people.
Sure,
flattening the curve. I have a feeling that no matter what we do, if this thing's that contagious, it's just going to spread.
No, it is
going to. But I do think they could slow it down to the point where they can manage it better.
Right.
I would agree that at least that is happening.
And speaking of that, roughly to that, is if you take a look at all the fear statements you're out there, fear of shortages. Right now, we're not experiencing shortages. We're experiencing a lot of fear about potential shortages in the future. We have enough of everything right now in this country, and our production curve is ramping up that I do not believe we're going to have shortages on anything, whether it be the...
So when New York says we need more ventilators, you're saying that's because they're looking ahead and projecting they'll need more, but then at the moment they have them.
Right now, it was interesting, Governor Cuomo, Trump said, we have shipped thousands of ventilators.
They ended up in a warehouse in New Jersey.
Well, now Cuomo says, well, that Trump does, he was talking about, we knew we were there. We're centralizing massive stockpiles of ventilators so when we need them. So right now, New York has a huge reserve of ventilators that were sent in by the federal government. They are not short on ventilators. The other thing that was brought out the other day, too, is that there are kits that will allow ventilators to support up to three people. Each ventilator can sort up to three
that's
people.
That's interesting that I've seen. I've never heard that anywhere.
Yes, and I believe that Trump actually mentioned it at a press conference. And I looked it up, and there's even cases going up to four. Now, it's not as good as it's not as optimal as having one per person, but it is actually will still work quite well. So I do not believe, if you look at things, we're going to be experiencing shortages in really roughly anything. And frankly, like President Trump says, at the rate we're ramping up the ventilator production, we may end up with ventilators that we can send to other countries to help them, which really, and having taken care of our own population first. So I believe that's number one. That's important to know. Number two is we are seeing a high mortality rate with this infection. We're seeing a pretty high mortality rate in Italy. I have much more trust in the statistics from Italy than I do from China. In any place other than China, really, to be
frank.
And
again, we shouldn't have to use this disclaimer, but we mean the Chinese government, not the Chinese people.
Yes, the Chinese communist government, exactly. But all pandemic infections like this work this way. Let's just ask ourselves some rhetorical questions. I'll ask this. Bob, when infection hits a population, who is it going to hit first? Who is going to show the symptoms first?
Probably the people that are already sick with a precondition or the elderly.
Right, the people that are the most vulnerable.
Yes.
So if they're the ones that are going to show the symptoms the quickest, and they're going to have the most severe symptoms initially. The people that have stronger immune systems, do not have the comorbidities, do not have the chronic conditions, are being the ones you're going to see that starting to come in later. So what we're seeing is, we're seeing what naturally happens in pandemics, is that you're going to see the worst case in terms of morbidity right at the outset, because the most vulnerable people, the ones most susceptible to these infections, you're going to see them first. So that is natural. Now, that's not very consoling if you're one of that group of people. And yes, if you are, over 65 and you have diabetes, you have hypertension, you have high blood pressure, you have any number of factors, you definitely want to be really, extra safe. And, and this is a new variant on a coronavirus that we have not seen before. So the immune systems are not very strong. So you're going to have to be very careful. But there is, as this infection progresses and we see more and more people go through it and come out healthy, we are going to, there's some very positive outcomes to that. I'm going to talk about that.
Okay, we'll talk about that when we return. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
This is Bob Siegel. With the wiring in your home, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. For all you know, he may have gotten his license by sending in 3 serial box tops.
Hey, these things happen. There's nothing wrong with my wiring. Houses burn down. You wanted a guarantee? You should have ordered the deluxe package.
Folks, play it smart. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. They specialize in contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I use them myself, and I wouldn't call anyone else. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric. License number 480539. WNS Electric.
Bob Siegel's novel, Push the Winds Around, is now available in both ebook and print copies. Check out this customer review from Amazon.com. Talk about a good read. Have you ever thought, if only God would allow me to go back in time to right my wrongs? What if I could change those decisions I made? What would be the outcome? Would the changes make a difference? If you have ever thought about that, then this book is your challenge. The story is so good you won't want it to end. You'll see why it deserves 5 stars. Bob Siegel, you've done it again. Can't wait for the sequel. Push the Winds Around. Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Stimulus package, and I must say the Democrats have inspired me. As of this moment, I am deeply offended that no money was put aside in the stimulus package for the funding of Star Trek conventions. I was also hoping money could be disseminated to study the mating habits of turtles, and I am absolutely outraged that this didn't happen. Say hello again to Mike Friedenberg.
Well, all I can say to that, Bob, is we need a real leader. And right now, we need Joe Biden.
Yeah. Good old Uncle Joe would just carry us through.
We need. Yeah. It's funny. I was talking with this about my son the other day. And when we had John McCain suffering from brain cancer, my son was just like aghast. He was just like, what is going on here? We're not just talking about cancer. We're talking about brain cancer. Why is he still in the Senate making decisions? It's brain cancer. And I do agree with that. That was, if you think about it, it's kind of crazy. And he really was acting erratic toward the end.
Yeah.
Now we have somebody like Joe Biden who
The good news is I don't think he has brain cancer because I don't think he has a brain.
Well, okay.
He would have to have a brain first.
Yes, if he only had a brain. Yes, I think that's... But regardless, he doesn't probably have brain cancer, but he is, it's clear.
It's like watching Weekend at Bernie's.
No, but it's clearly he's beginning to suffer from a diminished capacity. And this is crazy. This is absolute craziness that he's still being talked about.
Maybe, he's been making gaffes for the last 20 years.
It's really clear that he is having his mental capacity is diminished.
Well, so
it's not just gas.
Something seems to be making it worse. That's
yeah,
for sure.
It's definitely. So I do believe that that's the case there. But, you know, back to what we were talking about, that the we're having, you know, so you were talking about earlier, we need to be talking about the number of people that have come through this out the other side, healthy and alive.
Yeah, I think whenever they put in how many deaths, how many get it, they should also talk about how many who were tested that didn't get it. And for Pete's sakes, the recovery number. You can look those numbers up online. I put them up on Facebook a few days ago. They're already dated. We should see those as often as we see everything else.
So we are going to see a lot more people get diagnosed with this. I believe we're going to see, as time goes on, we're going to see the morbidity rate, the number of people dying, going down, substantially down. But we're going to be creating a larger and larger pool of people that have come through this and coming out with, if not complete immunity, very, very strong resistance to being reinfected. And this population of people now is a group of people that could be utilized.
You're going to use plasma to then...
Well, that's possible. That's one. But the other thing is, think we now have a group of people that when we start to talk about getting the United States back to work, this group of people could be people that interface with the most vulnerable. Because, first of all, we don't have to worry about them getting it, and they don't have it. So they are some of the safest people to interface with those that are vulnerable populations. And we're actually generating thousands. We're going to be starting to generate thousands of those on a daily basis, I believe. So we're starting to build up a group of people that can be very important and instrumental to us getting back to work. And I do believe that we need to get, you know, a phased approach. And if it's going to take to the end of April, I hope not. I hope we can do something before then, but if that's the case.
They are talking about the end of April.
Right, now. I'm hoping there. But this group of people there is going to be now. There's something very interesting that was that you, and it's really hard to find it online, but you brought it up. Right now, in the vast majority of the testing they're doing through all the regions of the country, when they test people that are sick. Now, remember, these are people coming in sick with symptoms that look very similar to coronavirus. They're coming in, they're getting tested. 1 out of 10 actually has the coronavirus. The other 9 have assorted flus, bad colds, things of that
and
nature.
And I heard that officially from one of the Trump doctors just the other day. But you hardly ever hear that. Why aren't we hearing that?
I think it was Dr. Birx.
Yes, the lady.
The lady doctor, yes. I believe she said that. So that's very interesting. Now, that's a group of people, though, that actually have the symptoms that have come in there that have been tested. These are right now, the testing procedures are saying, do not come and get tested unless you meet these high criteria of symptoms. Now, when people go to the doctor for the flu, they likewise go to the doctor because they have fever, because they have aches, they're not feeling well, they're coughing, they have. So it's interesting. You can look at some interesting statistics here. Right now, we're in the middle of a flu season, and the CDC has put out some statistics on this. Okay, so they're estimating between October 1 of last year and March 21 of this year, between 38 and 54 million Americans will be afflicted with the flu. 38 to 54 million. Okay, now roughly 48% of those people are going to end up going to the doctor. That's going to be 18 million to 26 million are going to the doctor. And that's one of the reasons we're probably having a little bit of more concern about this, because we're also in the middle of a pretty big flu season, you know, an annual flu season, which is, you know, filling up hospital beds. And guess what, Bob? You know, one of the things that is in high demand for the flu season?
Beds.
And ventilators.
And ventilators.
So yes. COVID is not the only thing that produces ventilator use. Okay, now you wouldn't have thought of it until now, but it's actually something there. So then out of that number of people going to the doctor, there's now 400 to 730,000 going into hospitalizations from the flu. And then out of that is going to come between, and this, you know, these are models, and they get more accurate as they get more data, between 24,000 and 62,000 people are going to die from the regular flu season. So, and if you take a look at that and you look at high and low ranges, that means the death rate for those hospitalized is going to be from 6 to 8%. But those hospitalized, that's not the people getting it. Those are the ones that are hospitalized. That means you go in there, you've got to already have pretty serious conditions.
Okay, hold that thought. We will be right back. Bob Siegel. Looking for a church? Maybe not. Perhaps you've had your fill of churches. Maybe you even grew up in the church. Maybe as a kid you were dragged to Sunday school against your will. Maybe you used to throw spit wads as Mrs. Pumpernickel tried desperately to interest you in the missionary journeys of the Apostle Paul. You may have grown up listening to long sermons, anxiously looking at your watch to see how much of the game you were missing at home on TV as the pastor made his 97th point.
or perhaps you were not raised as a Christian at all. Instead, you have merely encountered Christians. Maybe some obnoxious personality tried to shove the gospel down your throat using all the tact of a lawnmower in a barber shop. Well, my friend, perfect Christians don't exist because perfect people don't exist. That's why Jesus died for our sins. So I'm not going to tell you that the people of Skyline Church are perfect. I'm just going to tell you that we come real close. No, actually, you'll just find people who struggle with life the same as you. But we're honest about the struggle, and we help each other with the struggle. What you will find is a church that takes the love of Jesus Christ seriously. After all, his message is one of mercy and inclusion, and we don't need 97 points to talk about God. Ask anybody. Our sermons have never made more than 96 points.
Skyline Church.
Siegel Show, our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. Mike Friedenberg is with us, and you were sharing some very interesting stats right before we went to the break, Mike.
So the point of the talking about the flu, it's, and then let's then going on back to the idea, the fact that only one in 10 people that are coming in suffering from flu-like symptoms, which, by the way, COVID 19 has flu-like symptoms. There is some, when you get to a severe state, perhaps a little bit more on the difficulty in breathing side, that maybe that'd be the differentiator, and maybe a bit longer in the terms there, but they're very flu-like. So that's why, you know, there's, they have for every, you know, 10 people that walk in, only one really has the COVID. But the people that are coming in are sick. And they're the kind of people that would actually be going to the doctor anyway. So if you take a look at that and you say to yourself, okay, this is actually giving us a good statistical representation of the general population. If we look at the study there, you know, the study that's predicting the CDC study based upon many, many years of modeling there on that, you can actually say, based upon the folks coming in, the people coming in are very similar to the people that would be affected by COVID, but we're getting 1 out of 10. So what I'm going to say is that statistically valid, you could make the saying that if 1 out of 10 are coming in with this cohort of people, that that would be a way to estimate the total number of infections in the society. It would be about 1/10 of what there
but
are.
There's also the thing, isn't it true, of the many people who have this, who we are hearing will not show any symptoms at all. So that means it's not just the 1 out of 10 being tested. There's probably so many people that have this that aren't even showing symptoms that that would bring the percentage of those who are dying from this down even more than it is.
You're basically on the right track. But what it is the number, though, the 1 out of 10, you can take that back to the entire infection rate of flu in general, the 38 to 60 million people infected by the flu. Well, that's based upon, that would be the 10 people. That 10 people correlates. The 10 people that didn't have the COVID, it correlates. So what I'm saying is that roughly, I hate to say this, but it's probably realistic. It's actually good news. But I'm going to say that there's somewhere between 3.8 and probably 5 or 6 million people in this country that have the COVID virus right now, based upon that already.
But isn't it a little different from the flu in that you get some kind of symptom from the flu, and there are some people that are testing positive for COVID that have zero symptoms
and
never even get any symptoms?
I believe you can actually be asymptomatic with the flu as well, Bob.
Oh, really?
Yes,
okay.
You can.
I had
okay.
not known that that
you
was
can
true
be
with
as well.
Flu, but they
it,
are
just,
talking about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and very, very mild symptoms as well. So there's a combination of the two. So the reason that is good is because that gives us a huge denominator to put under the mortality rate. Now, all the people, we you know, the various rates, various people have been infected, and some of them have been recently infected, some of them are going to be infected, and they're going through various stages. So we don't know what the total deaths are going to be from this current group of people, and we're going to still be seeing infections. But we're starting to get much closer to the traditional, for example, 1% of in the regular flu seasons, about 1 to 1.3% of older people with chronic conditions will die from the flu when they get it. But overall, about 0.1% of the overall population. We may not get that low on this, but we could be getting, I think we're going to be well below 1%.
Okay, so Mike, while I'm listening to this, and it's very balanced, I'm not hearing a compelling case for shutting down the entire country. Social distancing, not shaking hands, not putting your hands in your mouth, maybe some ages staying home. I'm not hearing a compelling reason for shutting down the whole country, which is what we've done.
The thing is, though, that is different is that we've been able to stop the spreading of it because of the social distancing.
Right, and again, I think we should do some of that. I'm drawing a distinction between calling for sensible social distancing and shutting down the entire country.
So, but I do want to say there is some difference. One is vaccinations. Vaccinations reduce the chances roughly of getting things like flu by about 60%. You can still get it. It doesn't make you invulnerable, but it does reduce it by 60%. So we don't have a vaccinated population in this country against COVID-19. We do have a vaccinated population at any given time of the three or four influenzas or types of viruses, you know, every year. So this could still be, if it was allowed to run rampant, you know, let's just say we get, instead of, you know, we get it down so the overall morbidity rate, instead of 0.1%, is 0.3 or 0.4. And then we have it all over the country. That's a lot of numbers. That you're getting up into the big numbers there. So we still need to be a bit careful there. But there's things we can do. That is, you're saying there's things we can do. The social distancing is a plus. But we were talking about, you know, being able to. One of the things I think we should do is really, really focus on protecting the most vulnerable people. Rather than trying to say we're going to protect everybody, the least everybody, whether you're at a 0.1% chance of dying from the virus, I think that, you know, somebody that is, you know, 10 times more likely to die from the virus, that more resources should go to protecting that person. And I think that's what we need to do, is we need to focus on, say, hey, the elderly, especially the elderly, in Italy, they found that the average person that died was over 65 and had three chronic conditions on the average, yeah, including diabetes.
Now, they are finding more in America that are younger, but I have not heard yet in the stats how many of those had preconditions. So that'll be an interesting thing.
We can discuss that when we get back.
Okay, you're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
Bob Siegel not only writes fiction, but nonfiction as well. Over the years, Bob has received wonderful comments about his book on Christian apologetics entitled, I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But... Many have put this book in the hands of their seeking, unbelieving friends, and the book takes it from there. This is because the book has a rhetorical skeptic that argues with Bob about the harder, less frequently discussed questions. As a result, the reader is immediately aware that they are reading from an author who relates to them. The moment they find themselves questioning something they see, their very question appears in the text. Every question in this book was one that was personally put to Bob during his many years of speaking on college campuses. I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But... Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. This is The Answer. The lengthy daily Trump briefings, as seen by a national audience, stranded at home with little else to do and an eagerness to hear the latest developments, are allowing many, for the very first time, to hear President Trump himself without the filter of the media explaining to them what he said and how every other word has a hidden racist-coded agenda. For this reason, there have been two obvious developments. First, Gallup poll gives the president a 60% approval rating for the way he's handling this crisis. And two, the mainstream media outlets are now talking about no longer airing the daily Trump briefings. No surprise, after all, these arrogant, narcissistic geniuses know the rest of us are too stupid to understand the president apart from their insightful commentary. But we do have insightful commentary from Mike Friedenberg.
So just to follow up on your comment, yes, it's clearly young people are just like with the flu, young people are going to be infected, but their mortality rate is going to be way, way lower than that of the people that are high risk. So, but it may be higher because they're not vaccinated. Remember, the vaccination does have an impact. So a highly vaccinated population is going to be more resistant. So we don't want to, you know, we don't want to dismiss this and take this lightly. If it was just allowed to go crazy, and this is showing itself to be quite infectious, more infectious than the swine flu H1N1. It is infectious, so we want to be careful, but we can start to take steps. For example, as people go through it and come out on the healthy side, we've now got a big body of people that can do things that other people that may still have it or still might get it could not do. For example, interfacing with highly vulnerable populations. That can be used to start to get people back to work and also to protect those that are most vulnerable. And that's what we ought to be doing there. Bottom line is we're going to have the resources. Our private sector in partnership with the government, and Trump's, and he's got some good people doing this, we are ramping up to meet the needs. The social distancing has worked. We are flattening the curve. We absolutely are flattening the curve. We're going to have the resources. It's not that the morbidity rates you're seeing right now are going to come down. There still may be higher morbidity rates than with the common flu, but they're not going to be the kind of rates you're talking about now. Now, that's, you know, I just want to say, so it's I think it's overall, I'm trying to convey a positive view on this. And do not listen to this hysteria. New York has enough resources right now, and it's positioned to have the resources it needs to take care of things. You're hearing this hysteria, and the communication pattern we're hearing from everybody is future shortages. Doctors, you know, and the best intentions are looking and saying, okay, I've got enough now, but if it spikes this way, you know, and I don't have the stuff, until they have the materials in their hands right there in the stockpile, they want the stockpile right there available to bring in when they want to bring it in. That's what they want. They don't want to be told that it's coming in the future in a just-in-time basis to meet their needs. They want it right there.
Well, and I can understand them wanting to look ahead and be prepared, but they've also got to understand that the federal government's trying to take care of the whole country, and right. New York is only one state.
Well, no, and there's other states, but I guess my point is that there is fear of future shortages. I do not believe there will be shortages, but I understand if you're a doctor or somebody else that are in a healthcare worker and you're looking at a dwindling supplies, you're projecting a growth in, you know, hospitalizations, and people are telling you stuff's going to be there. You don't want to be told stuff's going to be there. You want a pile there, like Governor Cuomo's doing. He's got a pile of several thousand ventilators ready to go. That's what he wants. He's going to grab every ventilator he can and have it stockpiled there so that when his people need it, he can just bring it out under his complete control. The doctors want a huge supplies of medical supplies that when they want to bring it out, they don't want to be told it's coming down there. And that's human nature. That's just human nature. It's understandable. So that's what we're dealing with there. Switching to a different topic, something that my wife brought up and she'd heard is that after I think it was the avian flu, Governor Schwarzenegger said, you know what? Our state needs to be better prepared for a pandemic situation. So he actually committed several hundred million dollars. We bought 50 million NV95 masks. We bought 4,000 ventilators. We created three large mobile hospitals, and we stored in warehouse for future use. They were up and running there. And then what happened is, after spending $700 million, Governor Brown said, oh, The maintenance cost on those was $6 million a year to maintain them and to store them. They let them go away. So we just let a huge supply. See, this is the example where
you
the states
fall. You
can
always count on the Democrat governors when they get into control.
I mean, who knows? But the bottom line is the state was actually, in that case, under Governor Schwarzenegger, who I'm not a huge fan of.
No, I'm not either. He was a Republican, and I should say, in all fairness, I was not a huge fan of his either.
But he was doing the right thing. And that brings back to the idea of the states. In New York, in 2000, they had 73,000 beds, hospital beds. Today, they've only got 57,000. They've lost 20,000 hospital beds because they've created such a hostile regulatory environment and so costly that hospitals were not able to function there. They've lost beds. So once again, whose fault is that? Is that President Trump's fault?
Fault it is, Mike. It's Trump's. Everything is Trump's fault.
So the states have to be stepping up here. Right now, they're basically shifting the blame for not being prepared over to the federal government. Now, as Donald Trump says very fairly, he says nobody expected this. Nobody was really quite ready right out of the gate. But to sit there and say that it was the federal government's job to handle all of this and that, you know, to shift all the blame off the states is just ridiculous. The states were grossly unprepared. The federal government is doing a far better job than the states in many respects in terms of ramping up and taking care of things. Now, the federal government has some abilities the states don't have. They have the ability to print money and spend money they don't have. States can't do that. We can do deficit spending, which is what we're going to be doing with this $2 trillion. We're adding to the deficit. States really can't do that. So there is some things that the federal government has to do that. But that's just something that, you know, to consider there is that the federal government should be there to supplement, should not be the frontline agency for taking care of everything. And you're getting that sense that they're trying to create a new standard that, you know, once again, how many new standards have been created under President Trump's presidency? You know, things that other presidents did, SOP, standard operating procedures, are now, you know, my heavens, President Trump doing whatever the president, that's wrong. Well, now we're creating a new standard here because it's President Trump that the federal government should have been the one on the front lines handling everything.
Yeah, the double standard always makes your head spin.
It is there. So for $6 million, I mean, in the state the size of California with our size of budget, I mean, talk about, and what did they spend that $6 million on that was better, Bob? Can you think of some few things?
Well, some things they're thinking of spending it on. Free health care for illegal immigrants, tearing down the borders. That's part of it.
But this was under Governor Brown. But regardless, he spent...
No, I'm talking about what they're doing now.
Right. Yeah. But even then when he decided not to spend
the money. Well, there were all kinds of other social welfare programs.
Right, other things that were not as important that were, you know, currying the favor of some identity group, something like that.
Saving the life of the minnow, things like that.
Right, exactly. So we're talking about that there. So we have to buckle down here and we have to get back to work. And to do that, I do say that the lemonade out of the lemons is that as people come through this, out the other side healthy and functioning, we're going to have a larger and larger pool of people that we can work with that are really safe to work with more vulnerable populations. And I think that's just something that, you know,
that's good. I just hope we have an economy left when day finally arrives because they keep moving the goalposts.
And we also need to, here's the thing is too, but manufacturing is exempt right now.
Right, but still, an awful lot of people are getting laid off. Travel industry, the restaurant industry, the hotel industry.
Tons of people are being laid off right now. So we need to get back there. And that $2 trillion, I hope it really helps. But we have to selectively start to come back. And, you know, Trump probably made the right call today. But in a week, we may have more information. In a week, if we have seen a tremendous flattening of the curve, then he can call and audible say, look, you know, we're doing better than we thought we were.
Well, one thing's for sure, whatever he decides, he'll be criticized. Anyway, folks, our hope, of course, is God. We will continue to talk about God on this program. And by the way, you've been hearing our Skyline commercials. You have to go online to go to Skyline these days, but you can join them online. You can even join my Sunday school class online. Just contact me. I'll tell you how you can get into our Zoom discussions. Meanwhile, I will see you on the radio next week.
Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.